forever. Dog.
Comic books, comic time. Writers and artists are on the line. They make a splash as a comic's read and take us on a trip behind the spread. Watch out for comic book commentary. Spinning the winning inside fix, how they got a hot idea. Narrative, character, visual tricks, and onomatopoeia. It's comic book commentary.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Comic Book Commentary with Zenoscope's The Watcher. This is issue number 2. I'm Victoria Rao, the writer of The Watcher, and with me is Ralph Tedesco, co-founder of Zenoscope, and the guy who came up with this story. So we're into issue 2 now. Let's assume that everyone who's listening to issue 2 has read issue 1.
Right.
The last we saw of our characters, Erica has night terrors, and Stacy and Derek, our friends Stacy and Derek, were murdered brutally. Yes,
that's the gist.
We met our main
characters, two of which were murdered in a sadistic fashion.
Yes. And Erica was gearing up for her first date with Chris, I think is how we left Erica.
Yes. And we pick up several weeks later now.
It's interesting. The caption on this, because I think that's, transition captions are something that has always been like a little bit difficult for me. Coming not necessarily from a comic book background. I like an establishing shot rather than the caption. So that was like a big,
right?
Especially this issue, that was a big conversation between us and the editors.
It's a very in comic books. It's a very, at least, especially like older comics. Transition panels and captions are very, very big. Like we have a couple editors. One editor in particular has been editing Marvel and DC books since the 80s, and he is the caption Nazi for lack of a better word.
Terry
is very into his captions, so like he'll, and I'm the same way now. Like I think audiences and readers are a little bit more sharper these days. You don't need to caption as much. I think back in the day, like it would just felt like that's what you should do. But I think like media has realized like we don't need to handhold the audience all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think like it's a transition that is more like nowadays is not as important to do those captions when you're doing a transition. But older editors or editors, I shouldn't say older, but editors have been around longer, I think are more apt to want to still do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I do it now too, because it's like sort of like common for comic books. So people still do it a lot and I forget sometimes. So some of my comics, I forget caption panels, and then others I don't.
Gotcha. And I think it's just something that I just don't think about maybe quite as much. So it's always interesting to get notes back to say, okay, well, we needed a transition here, a transition there. I do remember having conversations about the bell, the dong, dong, dongs, and how many dongs should there be in this?
Dongs.
How many dongs
is usually, we have 4 dongs.
Is the correct number of dongs.
The first, when we're doing these podcasts, are people who listen, this is a question for you,
okay,
if you know, do they have the comic already and are kind of walking through it with us?
Yeah.
Or are we?
Yeah, we are walking through just as you would like on a DVD commentary track.
So we have to trust that they're reading this comic.
Yeah.
As we go.
We'll just say as a caveat, if you haven't got the comic, why don't you read along with us?
And there's 4 dongs. Four dongs is usually a good,
the correct number of dongs.
That's the correct number of dongs. You don't want to go 3 dongs. You don't want to go 5 dongs.
We promise we'd be less winded this time. So anyway, we'll move on.
Sorry. All right. We're on panel 1. We've talked for 10 minutes. Sorry. Okay.
Besides the transition captions, which I think is an interesting conversation, and it was something that I kind of thought about a lot in this particular issue. The biggest, I think, change from issue 1 to issue 2 is that we have a new artist on this issue.
Correct.
Julian was our artist in issue 1, and we have Babasu on issue 2 and 3.
And I think it's same colorist, yeah, right? Same colorist. Yeah. You know, he's a great artist. They're both great artists. They're different styles a little bit. So keeping the colorist the same was important, yeah, because you don't want to confuse the reader with new artwork. Although some of the characters are going to be drawn different naturally, because even though the artist might have references, it's still going to be a different style.
So if anybody's wondering why maybe Erica or Griff's look or Tamara look slightly different on page one, it's we have a new artist. And I was, you know, it was a little bit worrying, obviously, when you get somebody new in. But as soon as I saw this panel, the second panel on page one, this shot, this long shot of the church, I was like, this is gorgeous. I mean, all the detail, the little angels, the symbolism, the angels in the corner, which I remember I asked them to put in, which I thought was really, he did just a great job on it. And I was super impressed. So I was very excited after I saw that panel to have him on board.
Yeah. Yeah. He did a good job of jumping right in on somewhat short notice. So, and that's what happens sometimes with comics. You lose artists get pulled in different directions or whatever reason. Unfortunately, in this situation, I think the artist decided he needed time off. He wanted to semi-retire, in fact. So,
not saying it was the Watcher that 1 happens. That made him retire, but
it was Victoria's direction.
Copious notes. He was like, I'm out. No, I'm kidding. It was not that. Hopefully. Bowes has done a wonderful job, and I love all the detail. This is like all these crowd scenes, all these different people is, I think, always kind of a pain, I'm sure, to do. And he just did a great job on these. So we have what they are doing is they are at Stacy's funeral. They, several weeks later, they finally found Stacy and Derek, pieces of them, which is why we have a closed casket funeral here. And this is the wake. And they're Catholic and they're having a little wake afterward. And obviously Tamara and Erica are real upset. And Chris and Erica are clearly much closer. He's got his arm around her. Several weeks have gone by. They've presumably had their first date. And now our boyfriend and girlfriend. Yes.
Yes.
They are officially together. Chris and Erica.
Mm-hmm. Erica's first relationship.
Put through the ringer immediately. So they're at a funeral and then her dad sees them canoodling, or at least with Chris's comforting arm around Erica, which I think maybe he'll view as canoodling. And then some.
He doesn't like the canoodle.
Not even with his own wife, as we found out in issue one.
right, because of the Feast of St. Leo.
You're never going to.
He had abstained from that.
And we have some old biddies gossip, old church gossips gossiping about Stacy and as to what. And I took part of this. I had a friend who passed away in high school, and I remember at the funeral. I remember there was people who were saying like, "Oh, well, you know, was she doing drugs, or what could she have possibly been doing that would have caused?" She died of like an aneurysm in her sleep. It wasn't anything that anyone could have done. But I remember hearing people speculate as to what could have caused this. And it was a lot of like, what could she have done to have caused this? And it was very painful to listen to. So I put that in as something that Erica and Tamara have to listen to and don't really want to hear about. So they take off and go around the side to reminisce about Stacy and to smoke some weed. But Tamara doesn't want it. She doesn't want the weed. She doesn't want any to ruin her scholarship. She's not.
Right. She doesn't want to. She wants to get the heck out of town. She's ready to roll.
Exactly. She's got her head on, right? So,
and Erica is the weed that Stacy gave her, right?
Yeah, she still has it. So several weeks later.
Erica's not really.
Erica still has it.
It's not like Erica partakes every day either. Erica's not. But
right.
She's just sort of like.
I mean, like.
It's sort of like an homage.
I'll point out that I don't know if it's discrepancy between artists, but in issue one, Stacy gave her a real large bag of weed, and this is a real small bag of weed. So perhaps she has sort of dipped in.
her and Stacy's Chris. Death and Chris looks guilty. Chris does look guilty on panel. He looks on panel five. He's sitting there like, well, if the bag looks smaller, I don't. It's not me.
It's not me.
Not sure how that happened.
I'm just making out.
Right.
They make out. They give a kiss goodbye. And Erica is still trying to get used to the idea of having a boyfriend.
Right. It's the honeymoon phase. She's still getting butterflies.
So later that night, she's up in her room. Erica's up in her room doing some homework or whatever she's doing up in her room.
And we captioned it later in case.
We captioned it later. Later. So you understand that this is.
It's nighttime, but it's later.
Later. Many discussions about captions.
It is later. We're not saying anything later. That's not Let's, true.
Later that night. Later. No? Okay. So Tom and Lily are having a little convo about Tom is not as unhappy still about Erica and Chris dating. And Lily is trying to convince Tom that that Chris is a good kid. That if she's going to date somebody, it might as well be one of the, you know, the big guys around campus, I guess. As Erica finds out, she's listening to the door and her mom says she could certainly do worse than become Mrs. Chris Harmon.
Right.
And Erica is not entirely thrilled about them planning her wedding already.
All right. And dad's
because just one more reason for her not to get out. You know, she doesn't know what she wants to do, but she's not sure she wants to stay there and be married to Chris the rest of her life after going on, you know, a couple dates.
Right.
But that's the only thing that seems to appease the dad is that, oh, well, they could always get married someday. So then she goes back doing her homework. Her computer starts to, actually it doesn't really show it on the screen, but you can kind of see the picture. And what it is some articles about Stacy, about Stacy's death. It was supposed to be on the screen.
Right.
And her computer starts blipping out again, taken from real life. Cause my computer does that all the effing time. Yeah, but this doesn't happen to me where weird symbols appear under my bed and right. then my plug shocks me
right.
and then chairs fly across the room. Yeah, that's not happened.
That hasn't happened. That happened to me once, but
that hasn't happened. Not to me.
So now we're getting to the point of like, because we've hinted at the idea or it's been known that this house is supposedly haunted. Mm-hmm. And now we're starting to see that it's more than might be more than just like, you know, night terrors that Eric has had.
Right. Right. And this is, so there's this symbol under the bed is actually a different symbol than the symbol that was under her bed in issue one.
Ooh,
so there's new and different symbols now.
So pay attention.
Pay attention. Don't Google it, but pay attention.
Things are getting crazy.
So she calls, she makes a phone call. She wants to call and says that she wants someone to come over. We don't know who it is, but then in the next panel, on the next page, we find out who it is. She's called Chris to come over right. and help her. And I think in issue one, she called Tamara and now she's gotten closer to Chris. So
yeah, she's forgetting her friends and going to the guy.
Going to the guy like Stacy, because that's what people do. When they're in a new relationship.
That's what happens when it's new mm-hmm. and exciting. Mm-hmm. And now she's scaling down on the next page, she's scaling the house, yeah. which is pretty brave for
so
her.
So we get, I think what's nice is that we're starting to get some different little hints as to who Erica really is. So she can scale down a drain pipe. And that's why Chris is saying, wow, tougher
she's
than she looks. He's starting to realize that maybe she isn't exactly what he thought she was either.
She's starting to get a little bit more confident.
So they take off into the woods. Chris is rightly concerned about going into the woods after what happened to Stacy. She says we're not going far. She just wants to get away from the house. And here we get some backstory on Tom and Lily and their family as to why things are the way they are. She's upset about Stacy, about people talking bad about Stacy. And then she talks about to Chris about some of the backstory of her parents. That her mom right. was pregnant with twins How? Before Erica came along, and they lost both twins, one at birth and one of SIDS.
And that's why she believes they're so overprotective.
Right. They are unnaturally overprotective, partly because they have, in Erica's eyes, have experienced this loss previously.
Right.
And if anyone's wondering what's in Lily's locket, it's pictures of those twins, which may or may not come back. We'll find out.
Oh my god.
So they're still, so she's, and then here we get like, again, some little insight into Erica's character, that they never allow her to make any decisions. They don't allow her to choose her own clothes or cut her hair the way she wants or see movies that she wants to see. Right. Or
they're very, you know, very rigid in what they want for their daughter. The dad, you know, obviously you saw with the father is very, very big, you know, very overprotective.
Yeah.
And, you know, mom is generally the good cop in the good cop, bad cop relationship. Right. But even mom is a little bit overbearing too. So, yeah. So she's grown up sort of in this sheltered way, and it's kind of now coming to its surface right. with the murder of her friend. Yeah.
So, yeah. And so Chris mentions college. Erica is still upset because she can only go to Catholic colleges, which are commuting distance. So we get the sense that even if she does graduate and try to get out of the house, she's never actually going to get out of the house. They only want her to go to commuter schools.
Right.
So there's no light at the end of the tunnel for Erica at this point. And then things snaps. She's scared. She wants to get back. She decides to go back to the house. She sees things. She hears things. And Chris wants more information, but now is not the time. So they go back. And he says, "You can trust me," which is what totally trustworthy people say. Anytime someone says, "You can trust me," you should definitely trust them.
What are you trying to say?
I'm just trying to say something about our society that we live in, but that's okay.
You wrote that line. I absolutely did.
Now we get the establishing shot. We're back at the school. There's this super awesome statue of St. Michael slaying the dragon, which I really dig. And two people are talking. Why the woods? And we find out who's talking is Becky and Tamara. And Becky and Tamara are in a relationship, which maybe explains why Becky was not thrilled about Erica showing up in the last issue.
Yeah, because earlier in the last issue, Tamara and Becky was kind of...
Becky was rude. Becky was rude to Erica, didn't like her, called her the creepy girl. Stacey kept telling her to shut up. She also mentioned something about...
Right.
She also insinuated something about Tamara. And again, Stacey tells her to shut up. Becky was our resident mean girl, but we find out that maybe part of her resident mean girl status is because she is like Tamara trying to hide something. And they don't hide it very well because
father
is not pissed. Happy about this.
He does not look thrilled here in this panel.
So now they're stuck with these two girls are having to face this tribunal of Catholic men.
Right. It's just so like over the top, but it's like, it's funny, but it's not. It's like, it reminds me of kind of high school.
Oh yeah.
Where like, it's like, oh my God, you were caught kissing another girl. And like, now you have to embarrass yourselves further by explaining yourselves to three men in the cloth.
And the main principal insinuates that if they continue to do what they're doing, that her basketball scholarship could disappear. Tamara hits him back with some Pope quotes. And the vice principal invokes her parents. But then Tom follows in with the things that I think is what, you know, what I hear the most, which is you're expected to follow the same school policies as any other student, which means, look, we're not saying that we are upset about you kissing their girl. You can't kiss on campus at all. And it's just, we're not discriminating. You just have to follow the same rules. But you have to wonder then how many, you know, cishet couples are brought in to face a tribunal of men for making out on campus. Probably not many.
Right. Not a lot.
But they don't want to come out and say what their issue is. They want to dance around it. But Tom then comes out because Becky and Tamara say goodbye, and Tom has followed him out to yell at Tamara to stay away from Erica.
Right. He knows Erica and her and Tamara are very close, and he doesn't want this homosexuality to rub off on his daughter, God forbid.
Right. He sees Tamara as the biggest threat to his daughter at this point.
Yeah. It was sadly, Tom is very misguided in his views, and he thinks his daughter can catch homosexuality.
Yeah.
So.
Chastity and self-control. Doesn't want that to be an issue.
Next page, we don't have a caption. What happened?
Oh, my God. I don't know.
I'm completely lost.
Now you don't know where or when we are.
We don't know what time it is. I'm going to assume it's the next day. It's probably later that
week. It's probably later that day or the next day, because they are, Tamara and Eric are on the phone discussing what happened on the previous page.
Right.
So it is sometime after that happened, and Tamara's home.
And then
Erica is picking out stuff to wear, and she's more concerned about the fact that Tamara was making out Becky, of all people.
Right.
And like, Tamara said,
like, that's like, what you had to choose.
Like, Becky. Really, it was Becky. And Tamara's more upset about the fact that her dad literally threatened, the principals both threatened her.
Right. And Erica doesn't even really seem to process that.
Right.
Like, maybe, that's normal.
That's just
like,
normal that's, everyday life for her. It's like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, she already knows her dad. She accepts her dad's a freaking weirdo, I guess. Yeah.
So they're just discussing, they're just, you know, about California, and Tamara, or Erica says, maybe you should come too. And Tamara loves the idea. And then Erica moves her shoes and finds another symbol. This symbol she actually sees. She doesn't know what it is. She touches it, and the black stuff kind of comes away. And now she doesn't think she's going crazy. She thinks she actually is crazy, because what the heck would this be on the floor of her closet?
Right.
And Tamara's got an idea. She's picking her up the next day. She has an idea. What kind of an idea? Well, we'll find out. I like this little panel, the two of them just kind of chatting. Because I think, again, this is something that feels normal. And so since we start to get very abnormal moving forward from here, this little last bit of like just girls chatting on the phone about stuff that happened, is, even though the stuff that's happening is major issues, felt nice. They all pile in the car, and of course Chris has to tag along because they're together.
Right. Chris is the official
third
wheel. Well, Tamara, I guess, is the official third wheel now, but Chris is the third wheel in this instance.
And they're off to a psychic. Tamara is taking Erica to visit a psychic to find out what is going on.
We glean that from the sign that says psychic. Oh,
you noticed, didn't you? Yes. In case you were confused, it says psychic. But actually, we should keep that in mind a little bit. So it says, honestly, this is stupid. Chris doesn't want to go in. He thinks this place is a scam. But Erica's really willing to try anything. Right. And they come in. And we meet Maggie. Fun fact, Maggie has never mentioned my name in this. Maggie is only the name that we gave her for the script. So unless you listen to this, you'll never know that her name is Maggie. And I named her. I named her Maggie after Maggie the Frog. And for those who get that reference, we'll get that reference.
Now, Chris probably thinks this is a scam. And Maggie sure doesn't hide the fact that she's going to dress like the role.
Yeah. Well, you know.
She has a little costume pageantry to her.
Well, that's what you mean. If
she needs the business.
I mean, if you walked in and your psychic was dressed in just like, you know, a hoodie and jeans, you'd be like, well, what is this? That would not seem correct. She's got a dress.
But Chris is not feeling it.
Yeah.
So she's doing the, I guess, tarot cards here.
Oh, and if you guys tarot can look closer at this death card, it is the coolest death card. I am so, I'm so digging the tarot deck that we've chosen and was drawn. It's very, very cool. It's not a normal death card.
I like that Tamara.
It's normally death on a tarot deck is a skeleton on a horse, like a hooded skeleton on a horse carrying a flag. And this one is like a full skeleton, like rowing across a river of like dead bodies. It is kick ass. So if you can zoom in, or if you can look closely, or get a little like jeweler loop out or whatever, and look at this death card, it is cool. But Tamara's here, not for tarot. She wants to use the Ouija board.
Right.
That like, Erica.
Screw tarot.
Yeah. That's garbage. But this Ouija board, that's the real deal.
I bought this at Toys R Us.
No, it's an old board, Maggie says.
It's an old board.
It's an old board. It knows stuff. Chris,
it's been around.
It's been around the block, this board. Chris believes it's hokey, but they keep going anyway.
Yeah, Chris is not feeling this. He's I don't know. Skeptic. You know what? I don't even know why Chris had to come. He's such a downer here.
And you know, I think that's part of the dynamic and the point is that, like, why is Chris coming to this? Like, you know, he's one of those, he has to tag along, but he's going to be that right. annoying person he's who doesn't want to go and is going to complain the whole time.
Right. And Tamrick believes in his stuff, and Erica's sort of like, you know, trying to.
Erica will do whatever she can at this point to figure out what's happening.
Right.
So Maggie says that it's Erica who's feeling the presence, and Tamara's like, oh my God, she's possessed. And Maggie talks to her about some control. And then Erica goes, this is not helpful at all. She wants to know, Erica wants to know who killed Stacy. And they put their hands on the Ouija. Planchette. Planchette is the little thing they put their hands on.
Ooh.
Yes, planchette. I know that word. Planchette.
Fancy.
And it doesn't move. And so Maggie tells her to close her eyes.
Right.
And when Erica closes her eyes, she sees... Oh, this super awesome splash page.
That is creepiest that is shit.
I love it so much.
Yeah, and they're like staring at her with their blood eyes. Just,
so here's...
That's a great page.
So here's Stacy.
And it says, watch in blood.
And they're watching her with these bloody eyes. And they're all stitched back together. They've got these little like stitches all over their bodies. Oh, man.
Right.
I love it.
It's not ideal to see that when you close your eyes.
I don't think she's real excited about that, but it looks super cool. And so she opens her eyes, and holy crap, the planchette starts to move. It spells Trebor, but I have to give all the credit for this super cool page, page 18. Or maybe it's not page 18. I don't know what page it is. But this page with the Ouija board.
Right.
To Babasu, because when I had just tried to say, hey, I want this planchette to move around, and he broke it up into these little panels here where it kind of moves from letter to letter, and intercut with all the people talking about it, and it just looks awesome. I was so thrilled with it.
Cool page.
Very cool page.
Spelling.
It spells Trebor. I don't know what that is.
Trebor. What the hell does that mean is what Tamara says.
Yeah, so now Tamara's getting a little skeptical, like, what the fuck?
And, like, this is dumb, but not really. Tamara's more into this than anybody.
Right. But Maggie says, you already know what it means. It's right in front of you. Which is, I feel like, something a psychic says. Like, oh no, you know this meaning. I can't tell you what it means. You know it already. Tamara and Erica hands her this piece of paper. She tried to take a picture of this symbol that was on her floor, but wasn't able, so she drew it on a piece of paper. I don't know why the paper is so torn up, but it is. And Maggie warns her that she needs to control her destiny, which for Erica is particularly challenging since her parents control everything she does. But Maggie keeps a little symbol and is going to look into it for her, but warns her that they're already watching.
Right. So Maggie at this point is like, knows something's up herself, but she doesn't, I don't think she really has any of the answers. So she's kind of being purposely, obscure and it's like she knows something's up, but she's not quite sure what it is herself. So we might see her. We may see her again.
We might see Maggie again.
Because obviously she also has, now she has the symbol, so she's going to maybe look into
it. She'll look into that. She'll Google it for Erica.
Yeah, she has to Google it.
She'll do a reverse image search and figure out what that means.
And then, now even Tamara on the next page is like, sorry, that was useless. This lady clearly doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah. And here we find out that Chris has a slight sense of humor, and he, in his best sarcasm, is like, why would you say that?
Yeah. And he's like making fun of the name Trebor.
Yeah. Trebor. It could be Trebor.
Trebor.
They offer her for the night so that she's not alone. We find out that her parents are out for the night. And Chris gives her a little hug, but then, Erica sees something. She runs across the street. Check this out.
And Trebor.
Robert spelled backwards.
What? So either the
watcher across the creepy guy across the street.
Did the Ouija board misspell it on purpose?
Maybe it's like a mirror image.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Like if you were to look at it in a mirror.
Right. Mirror.
It would be back.
So there you go.
And they didn't give him the last name. It was only the first name. So who knows what that means? But Erica thinks she knows what it means. She thinks that it is Robert spelled backwards and that the creeper dude across the street the Ouija board was trying to tell them that it was him.
Robert killed Stacy. Right.
And as we find out that he's always watching them. Interesting, right? Right. Tamara wants to call the police because Tamara does things by the book. And Erica says, we don't have time for that. So she starts picking the lock.
So we see how Erica's becoming, again, she's more bold than she used to be.
Yeah.
She's freaking picking a lock to get in, breaking into this dude's house.
And Chris is, again, finding out a little bit more information about who Erica is as well.
Right.
And we found out that her parents, the reason why she knows how to pick a lock is because her parents keep locks and everything because they are controlling. And she learned as a young child to pick them. Chris doesn't want to go in, but Erica grabs his hand and says, sucks to be, let's go. I do love this house. I think they did a great job. All those crosses all over the place. It looks like this very old person's stodgy kind of closed in creepy house.
I like that Tamara says this is on brand for a creep.
Yeah.
This is on brand.
This is very on brand.
This is, let's sneak through this guy's house. That's great.
They find a desk with some stuff. There's some papers in Aramaic, which Tamara also finds creepy. Erica finds his binoculars and sees that he's got a straight shot view into her bedroom window.
He's not very good at concealing his creepy spine.
He's not at all. And then they open a basement door that has a giant ass cross on it. I mean, that's a large cross.
Don't mess with that basement.
Chris is saying, don't go down there. Haven't you ever seen a movie? And Tamara's like, well, this ain't a movie, sir. It's a comic book. So we're going to go down.
Right.
And again, Erica being bold, no one wants to go down to that basement except for Erica. She flips on the light and they come down. And they find out the basement is maybe the most modern looking area of the house. It's got a bunch of old files and boxes. And the boxes are filled with pictures of Erica's house.
Right. More clues. More clues.
Boxes go back to 1835, and there's a big trunk.
So this house has certainly been, we've heard about it being haunted. Now this house is being found in these old pictures. So is Robert watching the house? Why is he watching the house? So,
or he's at least collecting information about this house. I'm not sure that he was taking pictures of the house back in 1835, but
well, he wasn't
personally, but he's been collecting information on this house, or he has a collection of information on this house.
I love this next page where he comes home.
Yeah.
Four thumps.
Again, that's the correct number of thumps.
That's the right number of thumps if you're aspiring right. And then I love how Tamara's like, shit, it's the creeper. Not the guy who owns the house. He's the creeper.
Still a creeper.
Not Robert. Not the guy whose house he just broke into.
He is in the wrong. Well, I mean, that's always the way it is. There's whole horror movies built around the idea of like kids break into some guy's house, and yet the person who owns the house is the bad guy somehow.
Now, the last, as they sneak out of the window, it looks like the window cracks here.
I think it's just supposed to be like shininess on the window.
Okay. Wasn't sure if it cracked or if it was just noisy.
I just think we're supposed to understand that they got away before.
I thought it cracked and Robert like figures out like somebody was down here.
Well, we can go with that. Sure.
And then the next page, the first panel,
I think there's either way would not be wrong.
There's no caption because we realize they're still running. So we know.
But how do we know without a caption?
This would normally say moments later.
I think really it should be a dialogue from one of these people that says, quick, run.
Right.
No? Or hurry. We've already said quick in the previous page. So hurry this
and
way.
And they get
and make into, it inside the house.
Erica. Make it inside Erica's.
Chris thinks that maybe he just likes local history.
Chris, still the skeptic, is like, I don't see what's wrong with that.
Not a problem at all. He's mansplaining creepiness to Tamara, and Tamara is not having it.
Tamara's definitely third wheel here because these two are like totally turned on from their adrenaline rush.
Yeah, she's not interested. Erica's hugging him. And right. Tamara's like, no, thank you. And she's out.
Yeah, Tamara's like, all right, you guys are freaking creeping me out. I'm out of here.
Yeah. I mean, it could be partly the adrenaline. It could be partly now they're alone and nobody's around, maybe for the first time. So they start making out.
Right. They start making out. Tamara rolls out. She don't want to see this.
Nobody wants to see this.
No one wants to see this.
But Erica's just, really like, you know, this is probably the most action Erica's ever got. Well, so she's, you know, she's excited.
And Erica, since she met Chris, she's been very like, she's been a lot more, taking a lot more chances.
Yeah, very true. Or we could say since Stacy died, maybe she's taking a lot more chances.
Right. Stacy's death.
Not always about the dude. I'm just throw that out.
Right.
right. But Chris stops. Chris stops them before they can go any further. She's got her hands on his belt and he says, oh, I can't do that.
He's into it, but he's also raised super religious.
Yep.
So he's also sort of like, I can't let this happen yet. And of course, mom, like she has sixth sense, Batwoman, she busts in there.
I don't know.
She's like, what?
I don't know why she's flying into the room like this, but the mom's home early. Bad news for Chris and Erica. She's very disappointed. Erica, one of my favorite details about this next, the next page of the second panel is that Erica is trying to quickly button up her shirt and she misses a button. And to me, that's priceless. I love it. And
that's funny.
Lily is very pissed that she had made a purity promise and
Did you make a purity promise when you were a teen?
I came from a non-religious family, so they didn't really care what I did.
Well,
I mean, like, not that they didn't care what I did, but, you know, and not in that sort of way. They just trusted me to be a good
person. You didn't have to do a
purity. I did not have to do any purity balls or tests or rings or things that people inexplicably do in some cultures and religions.
Right.
Erica, on the other hand, definitely had to do all those things. I feel like this is the kind of family that was definitely had a purity ball. Lily is mad, but she also is, you know, she's cool. She says, wait until you're 18, just a few more weeks, and then you can be an adult and you'll be out of the house and you can do whatever you want. Again, which is like, and I think it's one of those things that I find interesting. Of this idea of 18 or 21 and these kind of arbitrary ages that we've decided mean that you are officially can make your own decisions or be an adult. Like there's some major chemical difference between Erica's brain a couple weeks before she turns 18 and Erica's brain the day she turns 18 will be somehow significantly different and she can make those decisions. There's something interesting in those ideas, I think. Sure. I find it interesting. I don't know if that's what Lily's thinking. I think we'll find out later what's going on in this household, but they have a nice little moment. Lily just says it's not fun to find her daughter and her boyfriend on the couch, and she's not going to tell the dad because it would make all the arteries in his
brain. Yeah, that's a pretty big deal because dad would, his mind would explode, his brain would explode. Mom seems very cool.
Yeah, after she got over her initial shock and upset, she's calmed down and she's cool.
Erica's like, yeah, but she also probably knows that dad won't take it so well.
So she's covering for Erica. And Erica's taking out the trash. Mom and kept her promise. But that's not what she's thinking about. She's thinking about the house across the street and Robert / Traber. And as if he knew she was thinking about him, he appears. And she uses her trash can as a shield, which I also adore.
As if he figured out somebody was in their basement.
Because the window was cracked, right? Exactly.
Right. And he doesn't want to hurt her. He knows, he probably figures at this point, he knows like she's onto him for whatever he's doing. and he needs to like try to defuse it in some way.
He hits her with some Bible commandments and she hits him back like, yeah, we get it. I went to Catholic school too. And then he says this little line, born in darkness, trapped in shadow, risen in blood. And Erica does know the heck he's talking about.
Yeah, he's not good. He's not a great.
He spends a lot of time in his basement looking at old pictures and slicing meat with a real big knife.
Yeah, he's not good at. Yeah, he's not. Yeah. He doesn't have a lot of social interaction. But it sounds like some sort of weird warning or some sort of even threat, possibly.
He leaves a little note for her, which she picks up, and then. If you don't understand that this is later again, the next page would be the same night because it is nighttime when she's taking the trash out. And then in the next page, it is still nighttime. Therefore, later that night. Much conversation.
Yes.
She's sleeping, her eyes open, and then she sees this creepy black tentacly goo stuff on her ceiling reaching out to her. And it's lifting her up off the bed.
Right.
And she looks very surprised.
Yeah, it's not good. And this could be one of her night terrors, or it could be something else. We're not sure.
She lets her go.
Falls into the bed.
She falls to the ground.
Falls to the ground.
Bounces off her bed, falls to the ground. And then maybe one of my favorite panels in this is the last panel of this page where she gasps and it's all dark. I mean, the coloring is just, it's just so good. Where she gasps and she's looking and she's got a little bit of like tears in her eyes. I thought it was so sweet. And then we get a splash page. There's something under her bed. There's something really creepy under her bed.
Right. That's a scary page right there. So
it was a very scary page.
Very good page. Another awesome splash page. That makes two awesome splash pages in this book.
If you're keeping count, there's two.
Yeah, big, really, really cool. Great job. Great artwork. And then she's not, again, she doesn't know if that was a dream, if she really saw it.
Yeah, I think she still thinks it's a dream. She still thinks that this is something that's just another night terror.
Or is there a house?
She calls it, she calls it Tamara. Right. We don't know.
We don't know.
She calls it Tamara. Tamara comes over. She thinks she can prove the creeper killed Stacy, and she wants to go back and break into the creeper's house again. And in the meantime, she has told Tamara everything that's going on, that the night terrors are getting more real and that she thinks maybe it's just stress, you know, and what's going on with her and with Stacy in the town and everything like that. Tamara still wants to call the cops, but I don't think Erica thinks that she can explain. Like, they call the cops, say, hi, I've been having some night terrors about a giant monster in my bed. So I think this guy across the street killed my friend. She doesn't think that's going to work out for her.
Right. So they decide it's time to go back. Break in again, because this is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, but they don't even have to break in, because the door's open.
Right. Door's open. They go, they see blood.
Yes.
They see blood leading them to, again, not the brightest move. They should probably call the police at this point. But they're not thinking clearly. Right. They want to save whoever could be in trouble.
Right.
They think maybe somebody's in trouble. And they run downstairs into the basement, where the blood is clearly leading them.
Right. And this is a lot of conversation, too, actually, was about the blood is... And honestly, the conversation was how much blood would be a reasonable amount of blood to get them to go into the house and yet not get them to run away screaming. So this little trickle here is apparently the correct amount of blood.
It's enough for most people to run away screaming, but because Erica's gotten a lot bolder, I think they're sort of like, we need to do this ourselves.
They're going to do.
We would not recommend doing this at home.
If you see a trail of blood going into a guy's house who has had binoculars on your bedroom,
don't go in. Don't go in.
We don't recommend.
Especially with unarmed.
Which is what I love. Tamara's like, how are we going to fight? How are we going to, what are we possibly going to do? Like what's happening? And Erica is not thinking straight. So she's just running right in. But they don't have to do a thing because Robert is already beat up pretty bad.
Yeah, Robert's not looking too good when they find him.
No. So Tamara pieces right out, like I'm calling him a one.
I mean, yeah, like Robert looks creepy, like messed up here.
Yeah.
Tamara's like, I'll call 911 when you deal with this crap.
Like, I do appreciate that Erica's like, what? Like, she's like, you stay here.
What do I do now?
Where the thing that killed this guy probably still is.
Yeah. Right. He's gurgling.
gurgling blood.
And then, you know, she's like, let me just check his pulse. But he gives her...
Well, he's talking to her, so he's clearly still alive. But then by the time she checks him, he tells her to open something.
So he finds... Right. And then this is where Erica's like, he's trying to talk to her. He can't say much because, you know, look at him. And
I think that Robert looks really cool. I love this. This kind of like, he looks all like slashed up and stuff. I think originally when we drew him, he had like his ribs busted open and we thought, well, there's no real way he could be alive. And we needed him to talk. For story purposes, we had to make sure that he could talk still a little bit to Erica to get her to understand what he wants her to do with this key and that he's actually giving her this key. Because that's really important to the story. It's important to understand that Robert wants her to have this and to go and open this box. She isn't at this point breaking entering anymore.
Right. And then so she goes, opens the box, knowing like she only has a few minutes because cops are coming. And finds.
And once the cops come, they're going to take them out and she won't have a chance to do this.
Yeah. She's not going to get back in, most likely. So final page is another bit. Well, that's another splash page, which is a really cool one of her seeing a picture.
Right.
In the book.
And it looks like one of those memento moris from the 1800s.
Right.
And you hear banging in the background. That is just the ghost in my house.
Well, that happens. So that's it for this issue.
We figure out what this picture is all about in the next issue, number 3.
We appreciate you guys checking out issue 1. We sold out of, and we had to do a reprinting of issue 1, which was really cool. So we're excited that you know, most of you guys listening hopefully are checking this series out, and you know, we're doing, because it's a 3-issue over, each issue is oversized, or 30 pages of story. Actually, this issue and the last issue are 32 pages of story. So, and the ghost is telling us.
You have been on this all podcast right. Well, long enough.
We've talked enough. Thank you for sitting through this.
Yeah.
We only have one more to go.
One more issue to go.
And we'll see you. We'll talk to you next
month. Thanks a lot, Ralph.
Thank you, Victoria.
Bye.
Forever.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Engineered by Chelsea Jacobson and mastered by Anna Rubinova. For more original podcasts, please visit ForeverDogPodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.